You need to be eating enough. You need to be resting enough. You need to be strength training enough. You need to be taking care of your whole ecosystem, not just...
You've just tuned into Rebel Wellness Podcast, your resource for realigning and revitalizing your health and well-being. I'm your host, Kaylee, also known as Coach Kales. I'm a holistic health educator, certified nutritionist, and fitness professional of nearly a decade. I'm stoked to have you with us. You just joined a community of amazing souls who are ready to break free from the confines of the often outdated and confusing health advice all around us. Living in a world overwhelmed by quick fix diets and unrealistic beauty and body standards, us rebels stand for change. If you're like me, you're exhausted with the confusion and polarization plaguing the social media health scene. My mission is to empower you to step beyond today's diet culture, adopt a holistic health approach paired with the foundations of science for lasting, well-rounded wellness. Through teaching you how to tune in and embrace your mind, body, and soul, we'll reject one-size-fits-all solutions, realigning you on a better path that honors your unique needs and values. With new episodes weekly, this podcast is your sanctuary for deep wellness exploration, featuring expert advice, real-life stories, and a true commitment to your growth. Your journey to better health and simplicity in life begins now. Let's jump right in. Welcome back to the show, Rebel. Today we have yet another Be a Rebel interview, and I am really excited for today's guest. I actually absolutely love having conversations, especially in things that historically maybe I haven't been as comprehensive talking about, or I don't have as much experience on, because I mean, obviously the best way to get a better understanding of things is talking to experts in that area. You know what I mean? Because we can't, you know, jack of all trades, master of none. We can't master everything. And so today I am really excited to introduce my special guest, Dr. Rachel Wysocki. She is somebody who brings a really unique and heartfelt philosophy to the world of running and athletics, as well as chiropractic, which is how I first met her. So I was really lucky to work with Dr. Rachel back in 2018. I was seeking higher quality body care at my friend Sean Masters' manual therapy clinic called Tangelo back in the day. And so I was really stoked to be paired with Dr. Rachel, and I honestly learned so much from my time working with her. Like, one of my favorite skills I attribute to her teaching me was how to cue for core bracing, or, you know, rather connecting to your core muscles effectively. And I really enjoyed the way that she approached, and how Tangelo in general at the time, but Dr. Rachel especially, approached movement and therapy kind of comprehensively. And I think that that's something that is really special and unique to her level or her type of chiropractic care, because it's a whole body approach. It is a lot more than just adjustments on the table. She's fascinating to talk to about, you know, how you integrate physical therapy into your chiropractic care and, you know, your manual therapy or active release therapy, otherwise known as ART. You know, there's a lot of different techniques that she was trained in and taught me and exposed me to, whether I liked it or not. There was definitely some funny memories about getting grassed in on my very stubborn adductor tissue that I still to this day have issues with. You know, I think maybe like one leg of mine is longer than the other, or maybe I'm just like tilted. Who knows? I think it's because I like lean back in my car and like just cruise. I have no idea why I'm a little bit imbalanced there, but I learned that imbalance through working with Dr. Rachel. So I owe her a lot to bringing a new awareness and appreciation of overall manual therapy for the body and understanding your body as like a whole, you know, mechanism of well-being, and learning that, you know, where things are exposed or imbalanced, you know, it'll tell us, okay, let's work on that. How do we work on that? How do we approach it better and get your body moving optimally and, you know, as healthfully as possible? Because, you know, the game of life is to keep playing the game. So you want to be as healthy and ease in your movement as possible. So anyways, all that to say, I am really excited to bring Dr. Rachel on as a guest for today's podcast, and it'll be a really great conversation for you to learn a lot more about chiropractic and running for female bodies in general. And, you know, like I was saying earlier on in this intro, I don't have a ton of professional experience with running. You know, I did a running clinic back in the day, and Dr. Rachel actually at Tangelo ran a running clinic as well. And there was just a lot that I learned, but my body, you know, well, actually this conversation kind of changed my opinion on how I thought about how my body wasn't built for running, quote unquote, which, you know, there is some things to say about that, you know, especially for females who have very pronounced pelvis angles. You know, if you have a very wide pelvis, you know, that is typically just mechanically harder on your joints when it comes to your hip joints, rather, when it comes to like your femur angle and all that kind of stuff. However, Dr. Rachel really opened my eyes to understanding that there are ways around that and that you can, you know, better learn to understand it. So I will definitely say for all of my Portland, Oregon, or even Washington residents listening to this podcast, because I know there's quite a few of you, definitely check out Dr. Rachel's practice called Soul Chiropractic, and she practices out of a space called Wildwood Wellness, which I believe is down on the waterfront. It's kind of in the neighborhood of Northwest Portland. Perhaps it's not close to the waterfront. My Portland knowledge is all mixed up, and so sometimes, you know, anything in Portland, honestly, guys, is so close. You know, living back in California, everything is so far away here from each other. I was so spoiled living in Northwest Portland because everything was like a 15-10 minute drive from me. So anyways, she is located in Northwest Portland in the Marshall Street Professional Building. So if you are somebody who is local to that area and you like our conversation today, want to learn a little bit more how to optimize your running, if you are a runner, athlete, anything like that, or you just simply want more holistic chiropractic care, that would be my best recommendation. Go check her out at Soul Chiropractic. But let's also give you a little bit more of the kind of like fine-tuned details about Dr. Rachel. So she's dedicated to helping runners and athletes deepen their understanding of the powerful connection between mind and body. Kind of like I was just saying, it's all one big environment that she likes to approach comprehensively. She's on a mission to raise awareness about the patterns of overtraining and insufficient recovery that often lead to injuries and anxiety in a sport that at its core is meant to be joyful and fulfilling, right, for running. Dr. Rachel firmly believes that we are humans, not machines, and that a good training and chiropractic treatment plan should adapt to our life stressors and evolving goals. With a focus on holistic health, Dr. Rachel aims to make achieving personal records or maintaining a healthy, pain-free training cycle not only possible, but also enjoyable. Her passion for supporting athletes through the dynamic interplay of chiropractic care and running coaching shines in her work. She's here to help you navigate your journey, embracing the ever-changing art and science of your sport while working towards your goals. So, with all of that said, nice little intro for my favorite Dr. Rachel Wysocki. Let's dive in and learn more from the incredible wealth of knowledge this woman brings to the table. Today on the podcast, Dr. Rachel Wysocki. She's an amazing expert in running and a lot of different unique angles that not all chiropractors really are. So welcome to the show, Rachel.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
So before we kind of talk a lot more about the chiropractic side and running, et cetera, I want you to share with the listeners a little bit about your story and your experience in the health industry in general.
Yeah, sure. So my story, how I got into this field is back in college, I ran at the Division I level and found myself getting injured pretty much every season with some pretty serious like bone stress injuries. And every time I saw, you know, you go to the medical doctor, they're like, well, stop running. That's ridiculous that you just keep breaking your bones. So it really wasn't a good enough answer for me. And that kind of sparked my interest to go into alternative fields like chiropractic, physical therapy, which isn't necessarily considered alternative. But
yeah.
The first time I saw a chiropractor was the first time I had that aha moment where someone actually assessed, you know, my full biomechanics, the first time someone actually felt my muscles and my joints to see what was happening in my body. And it just made sense to me that this would be a helpful tool. So it was kind of like a selfish interest in chiropractic to study that really for myself to see like, how can I fix this? What's going on? And then of course that passion, like a lot of people, just sparks. Now I want to share that with everybody. So moved out to Oregon, went to chiropractic school for many years and practiced in Portland since I've graduated out 7-ish years now. And just 2 years ago, I started my own practice so I could more directly treat exactly how I wanted to, give people the time and really focus on my passions instead of whatever the clinic needed me to do.
Awesome. That's amazing. And that's a really good way to summarize all of that. But yeah, so for everybody who, most people probably don't know how I know Dr. Rachel, as we met when she was working at Tangelo. Yeah, and we got to kind of connect and she worked on me. She taught me a lot of really interesting physical therapy things. And I owe a lot of my cues for core connection to you, actually, because I learned a lot of like how to kind of verbalize it so much better and also like force it properly, force it, quote unquote, like when you were teaching me all the dead bug stuff with the wall and whatnot. And I really loved your approach to how you combined the physical therapy side with the chiropractic and like active release therapy and all that kind of stuff. It was a lot more well-rounded than some of the chiropractic and such that I had experienced in the past. And it seems as though like you've kind of maintained that with your business now, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think that is why I wanted to start my own business is as Tangelo was an amazing place to work. It was like a dream job, but I definitely felt there was time constraints with the appointment lengths and times, which wasn't really my decision. So I love that now owning my own practice, I can take as much time as I need with people. So I can do as much soft tissue work as we need to do, adjusting and rehab. So everybody's different and I like to have the time and space to do whatever I need to do for that person in that appointment.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I totally align with that too, because I've always found that fitting something into a 50 minute or 30 minute it's so hard because it's like, oh, there's this whole thing that we should address, but that's going to take the entire session. And I know you want this part of that, you know, or whatever. And it's like not the in-depth care that you probably like feel like in your integrity of how you want to operate, right?
Yeah, it just gives me the freedom because there's no numbers I have to hit for a manager. It's just whatever I feel like I need to do. So it's nice to have that kind of that whole level of an owner or a manager removed because you're not trying to please or keep anyone at bay. It's just myself.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. That's the beauty of when you have that kind of inner courage to be an entrepreneur and stuff. But that's amazing that you opened your own place. I was really excited for you when I saw that on social media.
Thanks. It took me a minute to take the courage to kind of jump off the cliff there, but it's been so worth it.
Yeah. So for all my Portland listeners, which we have quite a few, she is you're operating out of Wildwood Wellness?
Yeah. So the name of the space I practice in is called Wildwood Wellness. I practice with an acupuncturist who I've been working with for 5 years. So my individual practice name is Soul Chiropractic. But us sharing the space together, we decided to name it Wildwood Wellness to include the both of us there.
With all of that, you also have incorporated a lot of your running background, right, into your practice now. So what is like the most passionate side to running for you with who you treat and who you work with?
Yeah, I guess I feel lucky because being in the running community myself, I do attract a lot of runners because that's the community I'm around. And I think I feel most excited about runners who are just kind of coming back to finding joy in the sport. I thought, you know, when I got into this, I'd be really into like the elite, the high performance. But I think the most joy I have is like a mom trying to run her first marathon or someone who's, yeah, put themselves on the back burner for years to take care of others and now wants to focus on themselves and running is that focus for them. So really helping a lot of women, men too, but helping them find themselves in the sport and get into it safely without, you know, overtraining or injuring themselves. So kind of hitting it from all angles on giving advice on training plans and then also on how they should be recovering, and then me being a part of taking care of them for recovering.
People don't really pay enough attention to like the female body's running needs compared to the males, I feel like, just from my end of the industry too. And I've always found that like there are things like running gait differences that will come in with the female, like pelvis structure and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. What have you kind of found to be a little bit more unique to the female?
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know, when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself, talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
I think it might even be less, structure is a part of it, but it's really the whole ecosystem of the female runner. And of course, this is so person specific, but really looking at like the stressors they have in their lives, like if a lot of them are moms or caretakers and working full time, the bias is towards women doing everything. And so their training plans might look a little bit different because there's so much other stress going on in their lives. As far as biomechanics, I mean, a lot of runners all need the same thing, and that's generally strength. So that is something that both men and women, I find, like maybe something there is differences in their gait and the way their pelvis moves. But at the end of the day, the common denominator that a lot of the runners are missing out on is building up strength to adapt to their plans better.
Yeah, no, that's totally a great point. Because I've definitely noticed for a chunk of my clients that do partake in running casually, when we put them through a lot of the like band strengthening, like the smaller muscle training and a whole bunch of full body strengthening in general, they tend to do a lot better. Like they have less knee pain and like all that kind of stuff. So it would make a lot of sense too, when you kind of just observe how much load is on the body for like repetitive motion. It's like you would probably want muscles to support your bone structure as best as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially the more mileage you start building or the more speed you start building. Like if someone's just doing running to maintain health and running like 15 miles or less per week, you don't necessarily need strength. Like running itself does build strength. But if you're trying to kind of push yourself, I think it's really obviously helpful to have that buffer from injuring yourself by building strength.
Totally. Yeah. I have a few more things that I want to cover in the running zone in a little bit, but I do want to circle back to a bit of your chiropractic stuff, because some of what I wanted to have you kind of expand on for the listeners is a lot of the different things to the unique world of chiropractic. Because I feel like from my end, I've experienced a whole spectrum of how people view or think of chiropractic. And so I thought it would be really fun for us to kind of break down a little bit of some of those rumors or myths, so to speak, because I'm sure you've experienced them in your life, especially navigating going through chiropractic school and all that, right?
Yeah, of course. That was actually something I didn't know about going into chiropractic school, because I had seen a pretty good chiropractor. So when I got into school and started learning about all these other philosophies that exist in the profession, I was like, oh my gosh, I wasn't even aware of this. So that's definitely, I do see patients who have been to other chiropractors, and I always ask them about what their experience was, because in any field, but especially in this field, there's like a huge range of what kind of chiropractor you're going to get or how they treat. And, you know, to each their own, I think some people can benefit from anyone out there. I don't want to bash other chiropractors who practice differently, but there are some patients who have been looking for something more all encompassing and kind of get that quick in and out adjustment. They don't really look at the muscles or the movement or really to take into account other things. And for some people that could be totally fine. They just want the adjustment. That feels great. And they move along. But for a lot, they're kind of left wanting more. And I think the other kind of red flag in our profession is sometimes there's like a salesy scamminess to like packages or treatment plans or just needing to come in all the time for care, which is obviously not something I do. So that is something I generally tell people when they're looking for a chiropractor. If they try to sell you something large up front, that's probably not the best place for you.
Yeah, I've observed that. So I think that's what is a differentiator of like your approach to chiropractic and several other people I know's like more modern chiropractic approach versus it seems to be kind of more of a decade or two ago crew of chiropractic where there was, you know, the little activators, the drop tables, and then kind of how many patients can we see in 1 hour and just became kind of clinical and profit driven.
Yeah. Right? Yes. And I would say activators and drop tables, those are tools like I definitely still use. Activators are great for if patients like are afraid of adjusting, that's a really gentle technique, or, you know, it's just gentler, those two tools. So they're not necessarily bad by themselves. But I do agree that, you know, the history of chiropractic, when you look at it, and there's still a big population that practices like this is kind of very philosophical. And they believe that adjustments can not only help like musculoskeletal ailments like I treat, but also just general disease and wellness, which, you know, I'm sure there's many people who have been helped by that and had great success, but it's just not my viewpoint or my philosophy in this field.
Yeah. And I mean, that's definitely a good thing to note is that those are very useful chiropractic techniques. The way people talk about it is really interesting. Something I wanted to ask you too, that is a really common thing that people ask, and one of my listeners wanted me to ask you, is how do you approach the kind of myth where a lot of usually like PCPs and such will tell people not to see chiropractors or at least not let them touch your neck because they can paralyze you?
Oh, I've definitely heard this
all the time.
Yeah, I have lots of patients that are nurses too. So even from them, and you know, if someone comes to me with that fear, I of course will try to educate and give evidence, but also completely respect where they're coming from. So I always tell patients who are like fearful of neck adjustments, I'm like, we don't even have to touch it, especially if you're not having neck pain. Like, of course, we don't even need to go there. But if they are having neck pain, I mean, the paralysis is something I've literally never seen actual evidence of legitimacy on. Stroke is one that's been like big in the media. And a lot of that evidence is correlation, not necessarily causation. But that's also most of those cases, the patients had red flags or risk factors for stroke. So it's not necessarily the chiropractor caused a stroke. It's that the patient, you know, was already predisposed and would have had one. And that may have been, who knows, the thing that did it. But it's really hard to actually study that. And I think in most cases, it could be considered negligence on the chiropractor's part if they didn't rule out red flags for like high risk for neck adjustment. But if you're a young, healthy, no high blood pressure, no red flags or risk factors there, neck adjusting is generally really safe and effective. But like anything, if you get surgery or if you start a medication, there's always a small chance something could go wrong. But generally, that would be in my wheelhouse. It's typically maybe you accidentally sprain something or strain something. Our malpractice insurance is super low for a reason. So I do think that gets blown up by the media a little bit. I think having a good doctor who's going to rule out any red flags before doing that is important. But at the end of the day, I 100% respect all my patients' wishes. And if they're like, never adjust my neck, I have so many other tools. So being able to do the soft tissue work, do the rehab, there's other approaches that can keep them feeling like safe and autonomous without being pressured into something.
No, that's good. And that's exactly what I've told a few of my clients where I've just like, they've thrown out their SI or something like that. And I'm like, please just see a chiropractor. Like your PCP cannot do something for you really with that besides cortisone shots and whatever. And then they'll be like, okay, but just don't touch my neck. And then the chiropractor will like do the x-rays and whatnot and be like, hey, you know, I think you could benefit from a neck adjustment. Like we can start gentle. Like you were saying, you know, this was one of my clients here in the Bay Area now. And then eventually she was like warmed up to it. And then the neck adjustments were amazing for her, you know, and yeah. Yeah. But I think that's really great advice that you give, to have kind of the patient advocacy, like self-advocacy of just tell them like, hey, you know, maybe if you do have a stroke history in your family, like, can you check me for risk factors? Or just vocalize, like, I'm very tentative about you touching my neck. Like, can we work into this slowly or maybe just avoid it at all? So I think that's great that you are not like forceful, of course.
And I do think that is on the doctor's end to do due diligence of the patient's history. They shouldn't advocate for themselves in that sense. Like, that should be on the doctor. But I do think as the patient, it's good to communicate any fears or anxieties or, you know, things totally. Like that on their end.
Yeah, totally. And it's just been such a, it'd be a whole different soapbox for another time, but it definitely there's, it might just be volume of patients some people are seeing, you know, but I just feel like there's a lot of less intake for a variety of medical things that a lot of my clients have been experiencing, especially with like in more insurance heavy practices where they just kind of, I think, are running through the motions and whatnot. But it's definitely like all of this is so important for everybody to kind of know on the back end, which I think is the great side of being able to have this conversation with you, because it gives a little bit of insight into what is okay to talk about and to vocalize and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah. And I think that that's definitely true. Those clinics that kind of just like churn and burn through patients because they're trying to get, I mean, at the end of the day, they're trying to make more money. That's probably not a clinic you want to be at. And I do think there are doctors who kind of skimp on the exam because they only have like 10 minutes with you or something. So I think, yeah, taking your time to find a good chiropractor. There is a website, Forward Thinking Chiropractic Alliance, that has a map of chiropractors who are members. And generally, most of these chiropractors on this list are a little more forward thinking, hence the name. But yeah, I think it's good to just finding out appointment times, if there's big payment plans up front, if they force you to take x-rays right away. Like, there's definitely things you can look for to know if this is going to be the place for you based on your values.
Totally. And the website was called what again?
Forward Thinking Chiropractic Alliance.
Okay. I'll put that in the show notes. Okay. But, and are you on that one?
Actually, this is embarrassing, but I have not paid membership yet. So I'm probably not on the map, but I'm okay with that for the time being because I feel like I'm busy enough currently.
I know what you mean, which is good. That's great that you are in that position. And I'm sure as a lot of things go with body workers, word of mouth is just really effective when you have a high quality service, right?
Pretty much all of my marketing is word of mouth. So yeah, maybe 90% of my new patients come from another patient that I've had before, which is really great because that builds a nice little community network of people who all know each other.
Totally. Yeah. No, that's exactly the same for my business in the past up in Portland and down here. And it's like, it's really fun. And it's also like tough because then you're just like, you've got, well, not really like tough. It's tough when you can't help everybody when you get a lot more inquiries in the future, you know what I mean? But at the same time, I think that's the beauty of where social media and just online stuff comes into play, is because you get a little bit more expansion to help more people. But the other question I wanted to, somebody had asked about chiropractic was, what are your kind of experiences with chiropractic in the side of like immune system benefits, because that's a whole reason I think why Oregon during the pandemic allowed chiropractic to stay open, right?
Yeah. I mean, so this kind of plays into that dichotomy between like chiropractors practicing strictly biomechanical versus chiropractors on the more philosophical end. Mm-hmm. So that in my approach is kind of a gray area. I do consider myself pretty evidence-based, but I also consider myself really open to anything. And I do think there are some people who experience, I don't want to say like chiropractic miracles, but that's the word they use for it when chiropractic heals anything other than like a musculoskeletal thing. So I definitely cannot say with confidence that chiropractic 100% helps your immune system. However, there are a lot of people that it does. So that's just going by, there's no research on that, you know? Yeah. So that's what everyone makes decisions off of nowadays. But I do think N equals one, and there's a lot of people out there who have amazing experience with it and feel a lot better. And so I always practice with that approach of communicating that honestly, because I've had people come to me and say, like, I've heard chiropractic helps with allergies. And I'll be like, listen, like,
I do not have evidence on that, but if you want to give it a shot, let's do it and see what happens. So staying open to, you know, anything can happen. And it's not crazy to think if everything's moving and flowing properly, that everything's going to function a little bit better. So that's kind of the wellness end of chiropractic that I do have a lot of patients who come in for wellness or maintenance, so to speak, because it just keeps them feeling generally better with their life. So yeah, I always just communicate clearly that yes, this is possible, but no, I can't medically say this is necessary for that.
Yeah, no, and that's a really good thing to kind of differentiate for people. Is that with allergies, yeah, that'd be kind of interesting. Maybe if like you had a nose adjustment, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's all the nerves from the spine go to everywhere else in the body. So it is,
yeah.
You know, there's a, you could see like, okay, I could see how this might be helpful. I just can't claim it, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. Which I think is good because I think there's definitely, sometimes a little too much confidence for some people where they're just like, yeah, it does this and I can do that and this or that. And it's like, but are you like, for sure? Like, have you run some studies with like a placebo effect, you know? Yeah.
Right. Which a lot of that is really hard to do. Cause like, how would you sham an adjustment? You know, it's kind of
yeah.
Really
hard. Right.
So I can see, cause I do, you know, I have some friends who practice more philosophically and they have found a patient base who really loves that work, you know? So it's just about what I value as a provider. I find patients that value that too. And so vice versa.
So I think that kind of is the major questions that listeners wanted me to ask about chiropractic, but I wanted to ask based off of a little bit of your story. So were you kind of inspired by the chiro that you saw and then it kind of made you think like, okay, I want to go explore this for a career path?
Yeah. So I was already kind of studying pre-med, so the human bio major when I was in school, because I knew no matter what I did, I wanted to be something in healthcare, something with sciences, because that is just where I was drawn to. And I think definitely the running injuries and finding a chiropractor that was helpful is really what kind of opened my eyes to that path. I did consider PT as well. I unfortunately, in my time in college, the PTs I saw were kind of like the run of the mill, you know, go in and do the same exercises, which again, that exists in every profession because there's obviously so many more amazing PTs out there, but that was just my experience. And also chiropractors just have a little bit larger of a scope, especially in Oregon. So I don't need a referral. I can order my own MRIs. So as much as I was kind of torn between PT and chiro, I just, those few things kind of pulled me to the other side. Plus, I do think adjusting is amazing and powerful for pain relief. So
yeah, I got that same experience because when I was going through for kinesiology, like it was like in my family, it was kind of like one half of my family rather. They're like, okay, so then what are you going to do with that? Like, what's a cool title we can like tell our family members, you know, that kind of thing. And I was like, oh, you know, maybe I'll do physical therapy. And then I met more people just jumping into the training world and stuff that did physical therapy. And it is like you said, there's that whole side of it that can become kind of a run of the mill, like you have to stick to following these exercises. Let me watch you do them. Okay, check the box. I'll see you next week, whatever. And while it's great that some people now, like the Myo Detox group and the people that kind of take it to this newer, unique level of training and exploring the body and biomechanics and all that, I think that opens up people who do follow the doctor of physical therapy route to having a lot more flexibility. Cause yeah, I absolutely was turned off by the other alternative. And I think that it is good for people to know, cause I was just talking to somebody recently about that. And chiropractic, like you said, it has a wider scope, which is amazing cause you actually do get to incorporate like your physical therapy knowledge, you know, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's really cool because it is a lot more all encompassing and more custom to the client in general, right?
Yeah. And it's kind of the same for both fields. Like if I had gone and seen a really terrible chiropractor and seen an awesome PT, maybe I would be a PT today. So
yeah, exactly.
That's just what happened. But even nowadays, it's the same. It really depends on where you work. Like so many PTs and chiros get stuck in those mill like clinics. Mm-hmm. And now my favorite PTs that I refer to now are kind of people that practice like me who took the leap and made their own space. And, you know, we make a little bit less money than if we were in a churn and burn mill, but we also have all the flexibility in the world and we get to practice based on our values. So there are many great PTs that I love sending people to for more complex cases.
Yeah, absolutely. If since we have some Portland local listeners, what are some of the clinics?
My favorite PT that I send most of my people to, if traditional PT has kind of failed them, is St. John's PT. So he's in the St. John's neighborhood, which, you know, I'm in Northwest, so it's not super convenient for everyone, but I think he's definitely worth it. Super evidence-based, gets the objective data, works one-on-one with you the entire time you're there. You're not getting passed off to, you know, assistants to watch you do all the rehab and never seeing the actual doctor. So he's definitely my favorite to send people to.
Yeah, I always like to kind of expand and let people share their community, because hopefully it'll help out the other businesses as well, get exposure. But that's great. Yeah, St. John's is North Portland. Do you have anybody in like South Portland area or East Side?
Gosh, I honestly, South, I don't think I know anybody in South.
It's okay.
I think honestly he's who I send everybody to, so I should branch out more, but I think I've just been so happy with every time I send someone to them, they're so happy about it, and they really don't have to be going 2 to 3 times a week, you know, so it he just gives you kind of the tools to take care of things on your own and check in with him as needed. So
that's great. I appreciate that too, because sometimes it's a lot for people to be like 3 times a week, like show up, spend 30 minutes doing this thing that you probably could have done at home, you know?
Yeah, and that's the sentiment I hear a lot from some of the clinics. So
And honestly, everything up in Portland is really not that far away, like moving back to the Bay Area, everything's so far. Yeah, it's ridiculous. But okay, awesome. So with your chiropractic history and everything, where are you kind of seeing your business shift as you're kind of evolving in this new entrepreneurial path with your business?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think having all the freedom in the world has been amazing and also kind of opened up every door, which is a little bit intimidating. So I have seen my practice take on a few changes in the past few years that I'd like to incorporate more of. I actually just started using this new gait analysis system. It's called RunEasy AI. I bought it last year, and I've just honestly been exploring the use of it with friends and some patients who I'm just curious about before I figure out the systems I want to use to implement it into practice. But I think it's a really fun tool and a great way to just get a little bit of objective data on runners and what their imbalances may be, which areas we might need to focus on by getting all those little numbers that I can't see with the naked eye. And there are a lot of research on people visually assessing gait analysis and how inconsistent it is, no matter how talented you are. So I really liked the idea of having a system that gave me numbers.
So wait, so does it work like, does it have like an interface with like a camera?
It is. So it's a belt system with a little, I don't know, science, a chip in it or something. Yeah. It sends me data so I can get, you know, cadence, I can get side to side asymmetries, I can get a comparable force rate side to side, hip shifting. So things like that I get numbers on, which is fun.
So, and then what would be, is it something where there's an ideal range, or does it depend on like the person's like structure as far as if they're a really tall person or a shorter person, or is it just all very strictly off of that pelvic stiff?
There's definitely a range. So what I like about this interface is it creates like a number system where they've tested and studied like from recreational to elite runners and kind of made like a 0 through 100 scale to make it more user-friendly. And so when I test people, it will give them an overall percentage to see where they lie on the scale. But then it also dives into like which areas you can improve upon. Is it like your dynamic stability? Is it your side-to-side imbalances? So it does give a number, which is kind of gamifies gait analysis, which I kind of like, because then it's motivating to kind of practice, retest, see where we're at, and try to improve your number. I do think there will be differences, and of course, like depending on how much someone trains, where they can actually get to on that number scale. And also at the same time, gait is not everything. Some people have like really janky form and are so fast. So it's just a piece of the puzzle that's fun to look at on top of like biomechanics, movement screen, and all those other things.
Totally. No, that's really interesting. I think utilizing like numbers and like gamifying, like you said, is useful for kind of making it more easy to digest and understand and aim for, especially for like patients or clients and whatnot, because they always want to have something more tangible to like focus on that's like more quantified.
I definitely see, I'm hoping this is a direction my practice grows more in. My current space, we started with small overhead, of course, to be safe. So I don't have room for a treadmill. And what I love about the system is I can use it remote, so I can go to a track with someone and get data. But in the future, I would really love to have a space big enough where I have a treadmill in my office so I can get instantaneous feedback on that and have people change gait in the moment rather than like doing a lap, checking, doing another lap, checking. So
yeah, no, that's really cool. And it's also a cool angle of how like you're on the cutting edge of AI usage for sports performance.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I think AI is going to just blow up in this next year. I can feel it. So it is really cool to have been practicing with this. And now I just need to get some, you know, business systems and effects to actually bring it to everybody.
Totally. Yeah. And kind of like, it's always that like, try it, see how it goes, adjust. Yeah, no, that's great. But then, so my question about the gait stuff, when you adjust your gait, because I don't know, a lot of my clients listening will definitely notice that I don't run myself anymore. I used to when I was younger. But when you're talking about adjusting gait, what do you usually like have to cue, or what do you usually find is what kind of improves it in the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I found it is really hard to tell someone how to move differently. So using like external cues, for example, with cadence, like, man, I can't even think of an external cue now, but like quickening your step or landing lighter, pretending you're landing softer, things like that. So telling someone to like, oh, land on your midfoot or land on your heel is just not actually going to work, and might make things worse. So a lot of times with changing gait, it's not necessarily the external cues as much as it is getting the information and then maybe doing drills or exercises that will help reinforce that when they're running. Yeah, but actually, I just remembered, obviously, cadence, the best way I think to externally cue that is using a metronome. So there is an app that I'm going to forget the name of, but I'll send it to you. But there is an app that will help you find your current cadence. Like you just hit start and run and it'll be like, here's your current cadence. And then usually, I mean, they say 180 is like perfect. Of course, no one's actually 180. That's just like an average. But if you're like running a 140 cadence, you probably have some wiggle room to improve that. So this app, you can just increase it like 10% at a time, and it gives you that little metronome beat. So you can start to quicken your step a little bit to match the metronome, and work on slowly improving that, because you can't go from 0 to 100 or you might injure yourself there.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So there's definitely tools, but I think a lot of the gait retraining is rehab based too.
Yeah, no, that would make sense. Because I can imagine probably the way you land on your foot or even the like arch in your foot impacting how you land is going to definitely come into the rehab zone, right?
Oh, 100%. Because that is, you know, works itself up the chain. How you land on your foot will affect your knee, will affect your hip. So that's definitely can go into like foot and arch strengthening or just awareness of your foot in general.
Yeah, totally. I've definitely noticed that a lot of my clients who are desk jobbers like sit in that kind of stiff ankle position for extended periods of time, multiple days a week, like when they try to go run and you hear kind of like the flappy foot slap on the treadmill or something. And it's like,
exactly.
We need to loosen up those ankles and stuff, and things will probably improve for you with your running. So I'm sure that's a lot of what you have seen in the past, or maybe present even, of course.
Oh, definitely. Sometimes it's just even awareness of like what kind of information your foot's even picking up, because we're all in, a lot of people just wear cushy, soft, supportive shoes all day. And then when I ask them to like move a specific toe, there's just no brain to foot connection happening. So a lot of it's even just waking up that connection.
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah. I've always been a big fan of the just grab your big toe and kind of move it in circles and warm it up, even with lifting.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. With speaking of that, though, do you have like a top two or three brands of running shoes that you would recommend to listeners?
No, that is so individualized. Because I know people who love every type of shoe and they're all good runners. So it definitely varies, and depending on where you are in your journey too. Because I loved Ultras, and I guess they're still one of my favorites for, I just love that there's the wide toe box. I have lots of space in there. They're perfect for me right now. I wear them to work and I wear them when I'm walking around. I used to also train in them, but now I've gotten to the point in my training where when you do want to get faster, obviously it is helpful to have a little more cushion and space. So it depends time and place, but right now I'm loving the Saucony Speeds and the Saucony, or the Endorphin Speeds and the Saucony Endorphin Pro. They've been my favorite, but I have teammates who love running in Nike. I have teammates who have run in Hoka. So it's a huge range and that is impossible to, you really have to go and you have to try them on and you have to run in them and see how they feel on your foot. And it also might change because I used to run exclusively in ultras. And I think that really helped build up some foot strength and ankle strength for me. But now I go way faster in something cushy and speedy and light that has a little more support. So,
yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah. And ultras are my preferred shoe too. I would use it more for trail running and things like that, or even just hiking, but because I love their toe box, like you said, it's like the most comfortable shoe, but I think it almost has made my foot grow a half size. It feels like, because I've been existing in probably proper toe box shoes for my foot.
Yeah. I was gonna say that definitely happens. And I think that variety is important. Like if you're running in Nikes and then walking around in Nike, if you're always in one shoe, you're not adapting. So I think having different shoes, like I still will run in my ultras on the trail occasionally. It just helps you utilize different muscles, work different and feel different adaptation. Mm-hmm. So, and there actually is studies on having 2 to 3 pairs of shoes in your training routine can significantly decrease risk of injury, which is pretty amazing. So
yeah.
Just having a couple different pairs is actually probably better for you.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I've definitely been enjoying the Flux footwear one as well.
Oh, cool.
I think they're Adapt. Yeah, but they definitely have, like, there's just so many different custom shoe brands out there right now. And so I was like, curious your thoughts of like what you've kind of come across and seen. But I do think that you're on point with the differences in those shoes, because definitely branching out of even just Nike, not to bash Nike, but just branching out of Nike is just like, oh my gosh, a shoe could feel this way, you know?
Yeah, totally.
That feels a little better. Okay, so with your changes with utilizing kind of that running gait analysis and such, how have you found like the pairing of chiropractic to balance with the running, with like combining the two? Like what do you find is your favorite kind of component of that?
I find combining the running and the gait analysis and all of that running specific jazz with my normal chiropractic practice, I find that working out well, because chiropractic is such an amazing tool for pain relief, mobility, and that's generally what people think of when they think of a chiropractor, is like back pain, neck pain. But those tools can be just as useful in an injured runner with knee pain or hip pain. So it really makes sense to me that I get to take patients all the way from when they're in acute pain. Sometimes our visits start more in the office and more with passive care, but then I get to move through that whole continuum of like, okay, I've used my chiropractic tools to kind of help get you out of pain, get you moving better, get you walking around and back to running. And now we can kind of get into the nitty-gritty of like, let's get into some strength training tools. Let's do a gait analysis to see what else we can work on here. So I think they kind of work on a spectrum together to take people from like beginning to end of a treatment plan if they so choose.
Totally. No, I think it's like a really unique marriage between like whole health care for body work. So I think that that's really, really cool. And it definitely can become a really cool big thing for you. But also on that note, kind of, I had mentioned before, I was going to come back around to some more running questions that are not as clinical. What would you say would be some of like your best advice for the female listener who maybe was constantly getting injured with running, but like, what are some active things you would recommend them like look into on their own to improve their running, to maybe return to running and not feel like they can't run?
Yeah, that is a great question. And that's literally, looking back at like my younger self, is kind of coming full circle to why I got into this practice. And, you know, I kept getting injured and looking for an answer in strictly biomechanics, thinking there must be something wrong with me. There must be something wrong with my gait. There must be something wrong with the way I'm moving, or some other, you know, I was putting it off on some external pathology. The more and more I dove into this, for selfish reasons, of course, and coming full circle to where I am today, running joyfully and healthily without any stress fractures, the more I realized it's just so much more holistic than you think. And like, you know, yes, you need to be eating enough. You need to be resting enough. You need to be strength training enough. You need to be taking care of your whole ecosystem, not just I'm running my ass off. What's wrong with me? You know what I mean? And so it took me a long time to get that and really hammer it in, like, especially because the system's set up right now for women in running, a lot of them are really toxic. Like, I mean, Lauren Fleshman's book about, collegiate runners and the system they go through, it's all true and still pertinent right now. And so I really think it's going to click for you when it's going to click for you, like when you're ready to accept the information. But there is a lot of things we can be doing to take care of ourselves better. And that's what I finally learned is like, I need to be taking care of my body better. I need to be strength training. I need to be fueling enough for my run, not running off what I'm eating, but eating to run, you know? And so I think it's not just an easy like rehab exercise. It's really a lifestyle overhaul. If you're a chronically injured female runner, there's so many areas of low hanging fruit you can go to try to improve yourself. And like I said, strength, nutrition, and then mindset. Cause a lot of those girls are also the type A perfectionist, need to do everything. So giving yourself a little grace and recovering when you need it, and that's okay. And then kind of building yourself back up from there.
Totally. No, that's a really like a beautiful response. It's much better than like do your clamshells or something.
But there's so much more.
No, absolutely. No, and I think that's such a great way to put it, because even from my end, it's always been for the female side of running for a more potentially kind of toxic goal, in the sense of like it's not supportive of like you really truly enjoying the sport and taking care of your body and the ecosystem, like you're saying, so that you can continue to do it your best. It tends to be a lot of I'm running because I need to just like make sure I don't gain fat or whatever, or I need to be under eating and over running and like just overtraining in general. And I've always seen a lot of injuries mostly come from that kind of mentality. So I think the way you put it is a really great way to kind of encourage an alternate side to the running relationship, because you can still obviously benefit from those things, having a running consistent practice in your life and whatnot, but eating enough is just so important.
Right. And taking the stress off, because like, you know, when I got into running, it was so much fun. It was like playing, go run around the neighborhood with your friends and, you know, play hide and seek or go run in the river. Like they were fun. And I was at, I kind of came full circle this past weekend, actually. I raced at a college meet that had open entries. So I was like the old lady racing against all the college girls. Yeah. I mean, I'm 32.
Yeah.
20-year-olds. Yeah. You're like, oh my God, what am I doing out here? But I saw this girl who was a senior who was racing me in the 5K, and she was like crying and so stressed before her race. And I asked her, I was like, hey, are you running the 5K? And she was like, yeah, I'm really stressed. And I was like, you know what? I know it feels like a ton of pressure right now, but you still have like 20 plus years after college to be doing this. Look at me. And she was like, that's actually really cool. Thanks. And I honestly felt like I was talking to my younger self in that moment, because there is so much stress and pressure when you're younger. You're like, this is it. Like, I'm in my youth. I need to compete. And of course, to an extent, there is like, you only have 4 years of college, but I never imagined I'd be 32 and lining up at an open meet to race a 5K on a track. And from such a healthier place where I had so much fun, I ran fast, I felt good, I feel good about myself and my body. And there wasn't that like, I didn't need to cry and put so much pressure on myself and be so hard on myself. And I think that's what a lot of these girls need to come full circle, is that, you know, this can be a lifelong sport, but you have to like take care of your body. Cause if you beat yourself up to the point where you're that chronically injured, it might not be if you do break your femoral neck and you need to get pins in your hip or something. So really looking at it from the long-term perspective, I think is what, which of course you can only see maybe when you've stepped out of it a little bit, which took years. We have so much time, and especially with running, you can do that up until your master's. Yeah. So
absolutely. No, and that's really good reminders for people, especially because I feel like everything feels so much more serious when you're in your like teens and early 20s. And it's like, in reality, you know, you'll be 35 and that race won't really have mattered anymore, you know?
And you can also still race when you're 35. It looks different, but honestly, it feels so much better now from this end.
I've always kind of found that like once you hit those late 20s, and a lot of people just say the decades of your 30s is so much more carefree. It's like 20s are fun and free and explorative, but they also have their own sides to it as far as maturity goes. And so I think that's kind of the beauty thing of getting into the 30s is like you're okay with yourself and you're actually like, you know, a little bit more stable. But if there's any advice we can give to anyone listening who's under that the 30 mark, that is really great advice. So as far as like a quick little question then, since you are a life runner, what is ways that you've adjusted your nutrition? Not in a way that's to encourage anybody to eat the same as you. I don't need to know exactly what you eat, but what have you found to nourish yourself better and that like your body needs more of?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it was just getting enough calories in general. I think, you know, while I never had an overt eating disorder, which a lot of women do struggle with, it was just education on I need to eat this much to run this much. So it was just eating more, not even anything specifically. Protein for sure. Come on.
Yeah, of course. all the time, always.
But like when I was in grad school and even college, I just wasn't, it was almost like a laziness of being able to feed myself enough to run. And so I did have to make a deal with myself of like, if I can't feed myself this much, then I can't run this much. So I had to cut my 60-mile weeks to like 20 or 30-mile weeks. So it is kind of like, I really can only run as much as I can keep up with eating for. So, and I still practice that. Like unless I can start shoveling in more meals a day, like I'm not going to be running 50, 60 miles. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause then it becomes a little bit like just too aggressive on your body. Like it's the overtraining cause you're underfed and all that.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's why, you know, people training for marathons, it's almost like a part-time job learning to eat enough for that. So I think making that just as important as your actual run training is your eating to train, I think should be just as important.
Have you found any factors for people you've worked with that are overstressed, like your moms, like you had mentioned you work with moms? And I have noticed definitely there's a lot of that usual messaging of like post baby, get your body back. Most people go immediately to running with the stroller or whatever. What have you found to be good advice for moms that are overly stressed, but want to have like upkeep or restart a running habit or whatnot?
Yeah. I mean, even for the new moms, everyone is going to be different. I've seen new moms who are like ready to party and get back into running like within 2 months, and others who it takes like a couple of years to find themselves again. And so kind of just honoring your body and where you are at on that journey, because everyone's birth story is different. And then everyone's, you know, first year of life with their child is going to be different, stress levels included in that. And so it's really making sure they recovery is kind of key in that sense. And training plans will just look different for new moms based on all of those other things going on in their lives. So definitely, yeah, keeping the mileage a little bit lower, taking a recovery day in between like hard runs, or, you know, not even running every other day. It's really just modifying based on what they feel. And I truly think they, you know, if they really have the time and the energy and the community and connection, they can do anything they want if they're supported. But it's also being realistic about how much time and space and energy you have to give to running on top of everything else that's going on.
Totally. Yeah. And in kind of like getting a healthier mindset around like, it's okay if you missed a whole week, like you're not failing or going backwards or any of that kind of stuff. Cause I've definitely noticed even with strength training routines, my mom's getting back into it and they're like, this week was crazy and I couldn't do any of it. And I'm like, that's good. You probably shouldn't have done anything else on top of whatever happened.
That's exactly it. It's like, you know, when you use the metaphor of like your stress filling up a cup, like if you're emotional stress, physical stress, chemical stress, whatever, it's all in the same cup. And so if your emotional stress for that week is already like overflowing your cup, probably exercise would have just been more detrimental than good sometimes.
Yeah.
So it's really listening to like, is this run gonna fill my cup in a positive way, or is it going to overflow my kind of nervous system and cortisol levels to the point where I'm just like injuring myself?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's always like the best question to ask when you're doing athletics for life, because it is for life and you hope that you can kind of do it up into the 60s and maybe even 70s if you're a spicy body. But that's really great. That's really great advice on that end. Thank you. Because there's totally a lot of moms that listen to this podcast, and I know they want to get back into their sports, or maybe they're spinning or whatnot. You know, it is very individualized, and I think taking away the pressures of like whatever TikTok says or whatever Instagram saying, you know, like in looking inward, I think there's too much externalizing when it comes to things that really should be like very, I guess, internal. Saying,
yeah, it's the comparing yourself, because everyone. I've said this like ad nauseum, but everyone's so different. Like everyone's pregnancy is different. Everyone's birth is different. And then coming back from that, it looks different for everyone. So like I said, while someone might come back in 2 months, another person might come back in 2 years. Another person might come back in like 10 years. And it's really, there's no sense of urgency. I like how you said, if you're being a lifelong athlete, you just kind of need to take the time you need with it and not force it.
Totally. Yeah. And it's like, you'll hopefully have another month to do whatever you want to do. Hopefully. But and it is also, I guess, important to note, kind of backtracking on what you were saying about eating enough and such, especially for postpartum moms getting back into sports and whatnot. But the nutrient reserves, like making sure, I'm sure as like athletes in general should know having more than the daily recommended values is really important, because you're asking your body more than the daily person would be doing, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you experienced for yourself like the need to kind of take general supplements, like basic things to kind of help your nutrient stores for running long term with good longevity?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely take vitamins, which is honestly newer for me. I feel like I'm finally starting to get my life together after starting a practice, and I'm like, okay, let's take care of it. So I definitely take, you know, being in the Pacific Northwest, vitamin D, multivitamin, omegas. I forget what else off the top of my head, but I try to take care of myself in that way, because that seems like really, magnesium, of course. So that feels like really low hanging fruit to just keep your body feeling good. I don't think, you know, if you're eating a super well-rounded whole food diet, that's great. You might not need them, but it doesn't hurt to just check your boxes with that.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. It definitely is one of those things where, for the most part, especially if it's a good quality company and such, like those are the best baseline supplements I even recommend to my clients. Because yeah, I think life today, our stress levels and just a multitude of things, we have less than we think we do as far as nutrients go. And of course, I'm sure it all plays into stress fractures and all of that stuff when you're not eating quite as much nourishing foods as possible. But because I think that's a little bit of a missing component for some of the athletes I've worked with in the past, for sure. But because it's overwhelming, like when I did my nutrition, sports nutrition certification, it was like, holy cow, like that's how much, like at the time it was a case study of a male athlete, but the amount of nutrients compared to the daily recommended value was so crazy. It was like 3 or 4 times because of endurance sports. And I was like, wow, that's a total angle that I don't feel like people are talking about enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely true. And I think that's something that when you're young, you can kind of get away with it. And then as you start getting older, you're like, wow, I should really be looking into this, because there's so many symptoms like vitamin D deficiency or magnesium deficiency can be affecting like just so much that you're not realizing. So it's an easy thing to rule out and be like, well, just like, let's get you to actual baseline mineral levels here and see what's left.
Totally. Yeah, no, that's a really good point. All right, Rachel, this has been amazing talk with you. I do want to ask the question at the end of in what way, if any, do you find yourself a wellness rebel?
I think I find myself a wellness rebel, maybe in the like medical field, in that I trust my patients' intuition about their own body just as much as I trust my perspective.
I think that that's like the really amazing kind of unique angle that you're coming at with your practice that I think is awesome. And I absolutely resonate with, which is exactly why I wanted you on the podcast, because I think that it's an angle of like taking better quality care of people's needs, of the individual's needs. You know what I mean? And I think we need a lot more practitioners that operate the way that you do. So thank you for being you and being one of those people in the industry that's kind of changing the game a little bit, or a lot of it.
Thanks. Thanks for saying that. It was so nice to catch up with you.
Yeah, you too. And if anybody would like to connect with you, what are your things? Tell everyone.
Yeah, so my Instagram, I think it's just Soul Chiropractic, and Soul spelled S-O-L, Soul Chiropractic. And that's the same website name, Facebook page. Yeah, so those are the best ways to get a hold of me.
Yeah, Soul _ chiropractic.
Yes.
Yes.
I just went to double check.
It's okay. You can't forget the _, but we will put everything in the show notes for everybody, of course. But with all of that said, thank you so much, Rachel, for being here and taking the time to talk to us about chiropractic and running. And if anybody listening wants to connect with her, reach out to her, go ahead and check out her social medias, her business pages. And yeah, thank you for being here.
Awesome. Thanks, Kaylee.
Hey Rebel, I just want to say a huge thank you for tuning in and sharing this space with us. Before we sign off, I've got some exciting ways for you to stay connected and to take your wellness journey even further with me. First up, if you haven't already, make sure to swing by CoachKales.com and sign up for our newsletter. It's your go-to source for the latest episodes, exclusive content, and a whole lot more wellness goodness delivered straight to your inbox. Check out the show notes for those high-quality tips on nutrition, fitness, and just overall well-being. Follow us on Instagram at Rebel Wellness Podcast and my flagship page at Kaylee Loren. We're all about building a community where we can share, inspire, and grow together. So I would love to see you there. Now, if you're looking to reset and realign after a vacation, a hectic work season, or just because you feel like it's time for a healthful cleanse, I've got something super special for you, and it's 100% free. Head over to stan.store/kales and download my free realignment detox guide. You can also find it at coachkale.com in the freebies section. I'm sharing my unique holistic approach to help you cut back inflammation, improve your skin, and even shed some excess weight with this guide. So trust me, you're going to love it. Go download it for free now. But last but not certainly least, if you've got a burning health question you'd like answered on the show, or if you're curious about my one-on-one remote coaching or group courses, don't hesitate to visit my website and reach out to me there, or hello@kayleeloren.com is my best email for contacting me. I am here to support you on your journey to wellness, so do not feel afraid to reach out. All right, Rebel, catch you on the next episode.